In our last time together, we were talking about the business of failure and the fact that it's okay to fail as a Christian. Now, I think this is a radical new approach for many of us who have been raised or who came into the Christian church with the idea that if there is a God who loves us and who wants to guide us as we listen to Him and pray and try to hear His leading for us as individuals or as churches, that then there's no more failure. We listen to what God says, we do it, and it's success. Well, suppose, for example, a group of Christians, one group that I know, raised a lot of money and built their church building, their campus in a certain part of the city, and suddenly the whole thing becomes changed. Well, they can never move. They've got to say, well, we were guided to build. We'll stay here for 100 years. Now, the thing is, even when we're trying hard to let God guide us, we make mistakes. And then the witness we give to the world is how we handle the mistakes. If we don't justify them, if we don't try to rationalize them, if we don't try to say that what was wrong is right, and we can move on, we become a people very secure who are at home with mistakes and believe God can even use mistakes. Now, in the very first days of the church in the book of Acts, we find all kinds of mistakes being made by those people. They tried a communal living program that didn't work. They had to abandon that. They tried to elect an apostle to replace Judas when God had somebody else in mind, you know, Paul, and all kinds of things like this that they did. And the witness was not that they were infallible, but that they were at ease and at home with their mistakes, could admit them and move on. And that's the very thing I need, a group to help me with week by week, to admit where I'm wrong and let God use it and to move on. Keith, how does that...
Well, you know, it really triggers something in me because I believe this so thoroughly, and we've tried to live this out separately and together all these years. And as you said that, it suddenly occurred to me that you're talking about a whole new concept of what it means to grow. Because the Christian life, unlike ordinary life, if you take a business, you know, it'll take a jagged graph going up. It's always got to go up. And so we've kind of modeled our pattern of growth after that. If we aren't getting bigger, if we aren't getting more successful, and we try to bolster it and make it do that. But it seems to me the New Testament pattern, the whole biblical pattern, is that people had to die, for instance, to their concept of the Messiah, which they had these different concepts, before the Spirit of Jesus could be experienced. In one sense, that growth must then be going ahead and failing and acknowledging the failure, and then out of that failure, out of the failure of Jesus' ministry to produce the kingdom, in one sense, his dying to that, then rose the church. And as the church died to the idea that you can earn it by works, as it died to that and said, no, it's by faith, the Protestant movement came. And so perhaps we have stopped and stifled the only means for real growth by trying to keep something alive that should die. Maybe we should let things die so that the new thing can be reborn.
Right. And not only are some things wrong from the beginning that we start and have to back off from, but there is timeless truth, which is like gravity or the grace of God that He loves you totally as you are forever. But there's timely truth that is only true for a time, kind of a strategic thing, and God moves on, and we build institutions around some shaft of light that came at one place that was true for then, that's not true now. And so there again, to defend some old insight may put us way out of the will of God and to move on.
Yeah, and maybe that was just for a time,
yet
we pour concrete to it. I see the church all over this country, and not only the church, but a lot of our institutions. It's as if we had an apple tree, and people see this fruit falling off, you know, and they want the fruits to show. So it's like gluing the apples back on the tree. And what happens is that not only does this keep the fruit from falling and thus dying and new seeds planted so there can be new trees, but it kills the old tree. The process by trying to glue the thing back together. And maybe we should look at some of the things we're doing and let them fail. Many businesses should fail. Businesses must fail if they don't measure up so that there's room for new businesses. And if you bolster them up too much, then you have a bunch of bad businesses, and everybody fails.
And the same thing, I think, is true in marriage and the family, for example, is that a Christian marriage is not one where nobody makes a mistake and nobody fails. It's a group of people living together, mother and father and children, possibly, where they've learned how to handle failure. Because we will fail as we live together, and if we live with the one who is our hope and our Lord, then we know how to creatively handle the failures that happen day by day. We don't glue the apples back on the tree in our marriages and families. We say, well, we failed. Now we're going to use that.
Okay, let's look at this thing and see how some of the ways, because we all seem to have a style. I find that I have a style of handling failure. Sometimes it's a very sick style. In other words, when I fail, often I try to get sympathy. I mean, I'll go home if I fail and say to Marilyn, you know, I've been so tired. I've been working so hard. I preface all that, you know, I'm going to tell her about a failure.
And therefore.
And you know, I am so tired. I've had so many people hanging all over me. And I kind of do a puppy dog kind of thing. You know, I look kind of sad and wistful and kind of lie down on my back and say, you know, I failed. And then what I want is strokes. You know, I want to say, oh, anybody.
Oh,
with all you've been
baby.
Doing. Yeah. And then pretty soon when I've had enough strokes, I get up, you know, kind of slink off and start again. Rather than just saying, hey, I busted it. Honey, I busted it. I failed. This is what I'd like
no
to do.
No preamble.
No preamble, no excuses. I failed, and what am I going to learn out of this? And begin to make this the beginning of a new thing. Now look back in your own lives and report to your group on some of these experiences concerning the style or the way you handle failure.
The key to living the kind of life that is a possibility with God in this adventure certainly has to do with our strategy for handling failure. And I'd like to throw in a couple of things here, Keith, for us all. One is that I believe there's no way that we can find God's best for our lives in the failures that come unless there's openness. Now, you can call it confession, that you were wrong, walking in the light. Somehow, when I can begin to be the person who doesn't have to justify himself, but who can say, hey, like you just said earlier, I was wrong, I blew it, forgive me. But I think to understand that simply openness or confession of wrong does not always change things. Now, there's no way that things can be redeemed, that relationships can be rebuilt, or things made right apart from openness or confession. But that's only the first step. Then there may be the restitution of paying back the money or trying to rebuild something or making it right. But I think often I've thought when I have sinned against somebody and offended, if I just say I was wrong, it would solve the whole thing. And here's a person smashed in the face, bloody nose, my fist in their face, and I say, oh, sorry. They're supposed to forgive me instantly. Mm-hmm. And I've got to allow my wife or my kids or my friends like you to have a time to react and say, I'm not sure I want to be your friend anymore, and give you that freedom. Or maybe more than just saying I'm sorry or I was wrong is to wipe the blood off your face and get you a Band-Aid and say, I'll even call a doctor. But there are things we can do after we've said I'm wrong.
Are there times, Bruce, when do you always make restitution? Are there times when that's not...
Oh, that's right. Good point. And I think where there is somebody else's reputation involved, I don't dare come in and risk somebody else's reputation. It's only involved me.
Could you give an example of that? Say,
well, I think if somebody has had an affair outside of marriage, you wouldn't go to all the parties involved because you're guilty and want to make it right and say, hey, I've done this.
Oh, yeah, because the other person's mate would be involved.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and
you
never
crucify them.
That's right. All you can do there is say, I'm wrong. And I think maybe before you even tell your own spouse, you may have a prayer partner and you say, hey, you know, I've really been off base and I've done it. And then you're open to God and some other human being. And then you can get guidance about whether or if you tell the other people involved. That's a good point.
Well, you know, in handling, as we've done in this session, very briefly and so sketchily, the problems of handling failure, we have often used during these sessions the analogy of marriage, the analogy of adultery, and of course these are the biblical analogies, the church being the bride of Christ, and a lot of people may get the idea that we are trying to say that this is where all the action is. Well, of course, it seems to me God deals with the deepest areas in our lives. And if we're going to examine failure, we need to examine it at the deepest area we can. I think God wants to not make us display these to the world, but to heal us where the wounds are festering, and in our families and personal relationships and serious failures. So this is not a mandate to go out and spread your intimate life on the street. We're talking about heart surgery rather than Band-Aids, and heart surgery must get to the root of the problem, which it seems to me is the failure in these basic relationships.
Yeah, but I think the same thing also applies to our life together as churchmen and Christians in groups, because I think we've got to begin to live a life where we admit failure as Christians and churchmen. I was with an educator recently who said that any knowledgeable school board building a new school building for use in a town ought to have a 10% figure in the budget for the first year after it's built for remodeling, a 10% figure every year thereafter, because nobody knows how to build an adequate building, because education is so in flux and so scary. But you see, most school boards, he said, want to build a building that will be adequate for 25 years unchanged. Well, you see, what they're saying is, we don't know how to do this thing. And I would love to see churchmen who build buildings and plants and programs say, we don't know how to do this, we're going to try this. But we're going to admit that maybe in 1 year, we'll radically change the building or the program as God gives new insight. So you build in ahead a strategy for the fact that right now, I'm sure there are mistakes we're making. And it's okay to make mistakes and risk, as we've said earlier.
Hey, that's neat. In other words, what we have done in building our churches and our organizations within the church is to discount the whole problem of failure. We have, in a sense, said to ourselves, now this is the perfect situation. And the fact is that since we are all going to fail and sin and fall short, we have built out anything to handle the new life that might grow out of that failure. So we're stuck with concrete poured to shapes that may not be right. Now, what do you think in terms of this? How can you be this flexible? Are you saying that you start with your own life? Where do you start?
You start where you said, with our marriages, our lives, our innermost feelings, our most personal relationships with friends. But then it has to extend out to our churches, to our businesses, to our schools. And we are not afraid of failure. We're only afraid of not risking. Well, I think this is a good place for us to go to a time of prayer and begin to think about ways that we can creatively, with God's help, deal with some of the failures that we've already made, which are okay if we face them, and to begin to anticipate as we risk the failures that are going to be ahead and not be afraid of them.